Thursday, April 22nd. The president had three major meetings today and had me sit in each of them, one with Dole and Ann Armstrong, one with John Connolly, and one with Bill Rogers. In addition to that, he had a breakfast with Laird, a long session with John Burns on the health program, a posthumous Medal of Honor presentation, and a long session with the pro-Nixon congressional enthusiasts. In the Dole meeting, other than a general political discussion, Ann Armstrong asked the president how he answers the question of how to deal with youth and how we should approach this problem. He made some very interesting points. We've got to give them a challenge. We can't let them escape responsibility for themselves and blame their problems on external factors. We can't let them think solely of self any more than a nation can think solely of itself. They've got to explore the unknown. They have to do something. He diverted for a minute to say that the U.S. should be first in the world because we will use that position to help others and to maintain the peace, to do good rather than to do evil, to help rather than to harm others. Back to the dealing with youth, he said we should be understanding of upper and middle class parents because they really do have great problems with their kids because they've been given so much. It's a mistake to think that the way to greatness is to make it easy to get there. For instance, the two greatest nations in the world today other than the U.S. are Japan and Germany, and they became so because they were defeated nations that had to rise up by their own bootstraps. He said we must not destroy the character of children by permissiveness. Permissiveness that denies a child the opportunity to look in a mirror and finally realize that the problem is me, not my teachers, not the war, not the environment, but me. It was a fascinating insight. He got quite absorbed in it and made these points very strongly. He also told Anne the story, as he had Henry earlier, of how his mother had had to support his older brother while they were in Prescott, Arizona, and he was recovering, or actually he died from tuberculosis. And in order to finance living over there, his mother took in three other tuberculosis patients, all of whom were also terminal cases, and nursed all of them to their deaths, with Mrs. Nixon providing the full care. The two together made quite an impression, I think, on Ann Armstrong, and she's going to use the points in her appearances. In the Connolly meeting, he got into quite a discussion of the cabinet and his plans for making changes there. He made the point that he was moving Stans to finance chairman and we needed a really strong salesman as commerce secretary. Connolly suggested Pete Peterson, which is really a pretty good idea. He also suggested we look into B.K. Johnson as secretary of the army or some other post in defense. He's apparently Clayburgh's son or nephew, and would be outstandingly good. Then the president told him that we'd be encouraging Hardin to go take the Purdue post, and Connolly suggested we go to past presidents of the Cattlemen's Association as good agriculture candidates. He feels strongly we should go to a Midwest or Mountain States man, and he had some specific names in mind. He thinks we should avoid the Farm Bureau. The president last night had come up with Harlow as a candidate for this one, but he didn't raise that as a possibility with Connolly. Then the president made the point that we were going to change General Lincoln at OEP, and we're thinking of Rush or perhaps Chapman of the Marine Corps as a possibility there. Connally suggested Admiral Anderson for that one, and the more the president got to thinking about that as the day went on, the more intrigued he became with the idea. The meeting with Rogers this afternoon was to cover the points that needed to be covered before he took off on his trip. It went very well, and there was nothing of any great substance. I've written a memo for the president's file on the specifics. In general, Rogers made the point that he doesn't think there's going to be a war in the Mideast because there's nothing in it for Israel, no reason for Israel to start a war, and obviously no reason for the Egyptians to start one because they'd lose it. Israel's got all she wants anyway, although she keeps moving to escalate her demands, and probably will continue to. He's going to try to talk the Israelis into considering a settlement on the grounds that they can get a better settlement now than they'll be able to later. He realizes he can't get into the middle of negotiating on this. He'll urge, not dictate. He'll stay out of the mediator role. He'll handle Israel and Egypt on a very evenly balanced basis. He'll keep settlement as a long-range goal, but urge something now, such as Suez arrangements. The president told him to talk to the Pope regarding POWs, told him that Scali would handle the ping-pong visit when the Chinese come over, rather than the State Department. Asked him to try to get some dope discussions going in Turkey and get some publicity on it. And asked him to give a brief report to the president each day on how the trip was going while he's gone. As he was thinking about the Chamber of Commerce speech and looking back on the success of the welfare speech to the governors, he came up with some ideas on the points that he wants to make in the welfare area. Principally that we should hit it again on emphasizing that he's not in favor of a guaranteed annual income because it may destroy character, that we should guarantee the right to earn an income, but not to guarantee the income regardless of the willingness to go out and work for it. He wants Buchanan to revive some of the things he used in the earlier speeches, even back in 66, on this subject. He feels strongly you don't help someone by giving him unnecessary assistance, because that destroys his ability to help himself. Harry Dent made the point that people want to be for the president, and they want reasons. They need to get a total picture of the man. And he thinks we ought to have a school for the sub-cabinet and so on to sell this point. In telling me this, the president got to pondering this idea and sort of came up with the conclusion that our problem is that the Democrats always personalize while the Republicans deal with process. And that the Democrats don't govern well, but they are much better politicians. Pretty good points. The other big item today was the continuation of the veterans demonstration problem. We had a long session this morning to try to determine what to do in face of the fact that the veterans are in violation of the Supreme Court order by staying on the mall. And it's really our job to enforce that order, but the president has ordered the Attorney General not to use police and not to evict the veterans. Our decision ended up to be that we just continue negotiating and try to negotiate the issue to death. Later this afternoon, the Attorney General, under pressure from Berger and the court, went back to the district court and asked them to vacate the order or dissolve the order, on the grounds that there was only one more night left and it wasn't worth pursuing. Apparently the circuit court judge blasted us on this move, and said that the court had been put in a very bad position, which actually it has, since we asked for the order to begin with and then didn't enforce it after we got it, which put the veterans in the position of violating the law and us in the position of not enforcing it. Fortunately, I don't think this point has come through very clearly, and it probably won't. We did move a little too fast on getting the order to begin with, though. End of April 22nd.